Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Space trash.
Trash in space.
Space trash.
Lifestyles of the rich and Uranus.
Space trash.
Celebrities, they're trash. But the astrology can help us understand.
Transmission incoming. Greetings, trashlings. Welcome back to another episode of Space Trash.
Lost sauce, you do rich in Uranus. And I'm Sarah Arwell.
And I'm Molly Malshine, and we're interrupting our regularly scheduled programming to bring you this very important astrological, pop cultural, financial, economical, evangelical check-in with what's going on with Taylor Swift, her new album, Tortured Poets Department. And we are joined by Keely Quinlan, the Honorable Keely Quinlan. She is my former colleague. She is a writer, a reporter, a musician, a Swiftie kind of. She really is a Lana stan, but she moonlights as a Swiftie. She has criticized music for Stereo Gum. Keely, welcome to the pod.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for making the distinction between me being a Lana stan first and Swiftie second. I feel like that's important.
It's really important. So, yes. Okay, let's get we're going to do, just so everybody knows, Keely is a Taurus sun, Capricorn moon.
Reverse Molly.
Reverse me, but with Aquarius rising, she is going to be a dictator at some point. So listen really hard to everything Keely has to say. And at the end, probably on the Patreon side, we're going to do a chart twins, because Keely has got a hilarious celebrity chart twin that I cannot wait to talk about. So that's Taurus sun, Cap moon, Aquarius rising. Tune in for that later. Okay.
Yeah.
Sarah. I'm starting with Sarah because I've been talking for too long and she's the co-host and she needs to get some words in.
You guys remember me?
Yeah. Sorry, everyone. I'm being like Taylor. I'm getting paid $4 a word. What can I tell you? Sarah, what did you think? What did you think of the album? The Tortured Poets Department.
The first major thought that I had that I'm really excited to throw by both of you is the Tortured Poets Department title. When we include Taylor Swift's initials, all of a sudden with TS added, it looks like PTSD.
What?
Whoa. Okay.
Are you with me?
Yeah, I'm here. Walk me through it.
If you take away the tortured and add Taylor Swift in between poets and department.
Well, it's like it's all letter play at this point. But like, I feel like the whole album is kind of like that. Even like the way that she's, even like the graphic for the torture, it's like almost like there's like a P or a D that's like pregnant inside one of the other letters. Like the whole thing is really like swirly whirly. So I thought that maybe part of the, like, it was almost like an allusion to PTSD without saying PTSD, which I think this whole album, like, on the one hand, it tries to be really literal and tell you like TMI details from her actual journal. And on the other hand, she's like, what am I, is it about? Who is it about? What are we talking about? And it's like, I think what we're talking about is Taylor's experience of PTSD after her Maddie Healy affair. I think that's what this is.
I think it's safe to say that Taylor would not hide. I mean, it's when there are like nine wars going on and a lot of poverty and everything, like, it's very offensive to say that you have PTSD as a billionaire who just, you know, dated someone. And I don't think, knowing Taylor as we know her, I don't think she would hide that. I think she would be like, I have PTSD. Like, I think it would be screaming. I don't think she would be hiding it. But Keely, what do you think? What did you think about the album?
Just to talk about what we're discussing right now, I have to agree with you, Molly. I feel like she would 100% label herself as such. She's already talked about how her relationship with Joe Alwyn was like a prison. And that might be offensive to ex-convicts. You know what I mean?
Or current.
Or to me, a white girl who's trying not to be annoying.
And that's to anybody.
She's giving us a bad name. Trying so hard not to be annoying. And then Taylor comes out with, I'm tortured and I'm in prison. And it's like, God damn it.
Right.
Yeah. No, my like initial reaction to the album was a bit of a letdown, and also not staying up to like hear it, you know, at 11 p.m. Central Time, which I had done with Midnights. And then waking up to literally it being 31 tracks instead of 16, it felt like I didn't get through the entire album until Saturday. Like it was too much. Like, so I am almost to the point where I'm like feeling a bit oversaturated with like all of the different things that we've got to like digest and make sense of. But overall, like, it's definitely growing on me. I struggle though with like trying to parse a meaning from this. I feel like there's just, again, so much to digest. It's overwhelming. Like,
yeah, I agree.
You know what it feels like a little bit? It's like when your friends don't ask, like, hey, are you available for me to vent? It's like the whole thing is just a bit of like a dump.
Yeah.
16 tracks would have been enough. 31. I mean, I tried to listen to it because I thought we were talking about it earlier than we did anyway. But so like I started listening to it, and like, you know, I did find myself, I listened to it again a second time, but like I found myself like there's like a chunk in the middle there where I was just like next, next, and next, and they all sounded exactly the same. And it's like, Taylor, like Brava, your most unhinged album yet. It's like, yeah, sort of unhinged to not give a fuck if it's a good album. Like, yeah, fucking unhinged, bro. Yeah, no one needs to like it. It's like, well.
Yeah, it's interesting because, yeah, it's not just long. It's also dense, which is also when I said on my wedding night. No, just kidding. It's not just extremely long. It's so wordy and verbose, and it's just, it's so much that yes, you do need a lot of time. You need to listen to it a few times to let it sink in and figure out what the themes are and what she's saying and who it's about. And it's so long that you can't give it that chance. And that's that's where the issue with the length comes in, because Cowboy Carter is also really long. It's not this long, but it's really long. But Cowboy Carter is so in your face. The songs are very differentiated to me. There are hooks, hook after hook, banger after banger. Like when the first night that Cowboy Carter came out and I was waking up and tossing and turning as I do every night as a Capricorn, like I was waking up with a different track from the album replaying in my ear the entire night after I had only listened to each track once or twice. Whereas with this one, like I've gone through it quite a few times, and it's still grabbing a hook from it is still, it's just beyond me. Like I the only one I'm starting to get that is starting to imprint itself on my gray matter is Who's Gonna Something from the Tortured Poets Department titular track. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
Yeah.
The only two I have are For a Fortnight, da, da, da. Okay. And then also, Now I can't even do it. I'm so depressed, it's my birthday.
Yeah. I'm so depressed, I act like it's my birthday. Yeah, no. Oh, my God. That one drives me up a wall. Like, it's too on the nose. She's too self-aware.
Which song is it?
I Can Do It With a Broken Heart.
Oh, yeah. That was the you know, crying in my private jet. What is the song? My Maserati does 185. I lost my license and now I can't drive. Life's been good. Who sings it? I can't remember. My dad's obsessed with it because he's like, this song is the epitome of every rock or pop star who gets so big that now all their songs are about touring and about how hard it is to be touring. And it's just like, it's not relatable. And it's okay. Everything doesn't have to be relatable. But yeah, that one especially, that one was close to having a hook. I know you guys both liked Down Bad Crying at the Gym. Oh, that's a good one.
Okay, but can we talk about how that is like the simp anthem? Like
simp?
Yeah, like being a simp. Like I, as a person who would unfortunately just be like, yeah, I'm a simp, like
own it.
That song checks every box. I also really love when Taylor Swift is horny. Like like, yes, like honestly, like for her to have this, like, you know, such like a pure like air about her, for her to just be like, yeah, you know what, I think about you sometimes in ways that are impure. I'm like, honestly, yes, I want more of that.
What part of it came across as horny to you?
Being down bad for somebody is a horny thought.
It is a horny thought. The first thing I texted Molly while I was like midway through the first 16 was like, whoa, I said to you, I was like, Matty Healy must have been great in bed when he wasn't too fucked up. Like, that's the impression. Because she, to me, the horniness also comes from the lack of materialization of anything. Like, the fact that Fortnite is even the leading track and it's like, I touched you for a Fortnite. No, she's like still thinking about it when she comes, for sure.
Yeah, wait, what song is it where she's literally talking about that?
The one that was like, touch me while you're playing video games, Grand Theft Auto.
No, not the high school, not the high school song.
That was more in real time.
Yeah.
I really liked, I did not come up with this, and I wish I knew who did. I can't remember, but they were like, when you order video games by Lana Del Rey on Temu, and it was like, touch me while you're playing Grand Theft Auto. Keely, I've been thinking about you all weekend because of the Lana inspiration, let's call it that.
I have a lot of thoughts here. I have too many thoughts.
This is just a rip off of Lana in like a weird way.
There's a lot of ripping. Okay. I hesitate to be like, this is an immediate rip off, but the parallel between Mariner's apartment complex, the opening line, you took my sadness out of context at the Mariner's apartment complex, and then
banger.
With the tortured poets department, her literally saying, hold on, what is the line? You left your typewriter at my apartment, straight from the tortured poets department. Tell me that's not like syllable for syllable, like parallel. And also too, like, if you listen to Fresh Out the Slammer, like the beginning, like the almost like, you know, I don't want to say Texas Hold'em because that's Beyonce's thing now, but like the saloon feeling of like that song, like the doors burst open. If you speed that up, it is Summertime Sadness.
I saw that on Twitter today. Somebody said, someone made a whole thread of all the times that she's ripped off Lana, and it was jarring. The thing that's really weird about it is, and we talked about this on this very podcast, her extremely strange display at the Grammys this year where she dragged Lana up to the stage and Lana looked like she wanted to kill herself the whole time. And she had those crazy bangs and the dress that matched the bangs. And it was just the weirdest night for everyone involved. And it just kind of seemed like maybe she knew that this comparison was going to be made. So she was like, I need to make a public declaration that Lana co-signs me. Like, I need everyone to know that, maybe I am sort of taking a lot of inspiration from her. But the other thing is, do you remember, Keely, when we were at Galore, I think you did a post that was like every 60s and 70s rock reference on Lana's new album, because that one album that she came out with, it was so many lines were lust for life. Iggy Pop, like everything on that album was lifted from something else, but I think it was in more of a obviously self-aware way, and it was taking it and churning it up and spitting out something new, whereas, you know, Tortured Poets Department feels like Lana homage and not quite as intentional. I don't know, but it's okay. I also think that's okay.
No,
it's fine.
I think for Taylor, like, to be so forthright as to say like Lana is like one of my greatest inspirations, and that like, yeah, very awkward display at the Grammys where like Lana looked like she wanted to like just peel her skin off and run off the stage, you know? Like,
I was sure that they had to be on mushrooms.
I hope they were. That would be better.
That's the only thing that I could make sense of it to me.
Yeah. I felt so bad for her because, like, knowing as much as I know about Lana, like, and how she already has a very awkward relationship with, like, fame and persona, and also the Recording Academy, which has snubbed her time and time again, to be almost like put on display by Taylor Swift in this way, which to me, like, looking, like, I literally was like, you know what, fuck Taylor for that. Like, there was absolutely no rhyme or reason that she needed to be on stage with Taylor at that moment. And Lana's refusal from the jump and saying no should have been enough, but it was like forced, it was awkward. Lana having to like come on online the day after and do Damage Control and say like, actually no, like I had a great time and it wasn't forced and whatever. I think only speaks to what I know to be true, is that she did not feel that way and actually was awkward, and did not feel comfortable in that moment. I also think too, with Lana and Taylor relying on Jack Antonoff so much as the core producer of both of their, you know, most recent bodies of work, I think lends itself to the very obvious overlaps. And I also think that, like, with Taylor in this record, somebody said this on Twitter and I like can't get it out of my head when I listen to it now. This feels like she's doing an impression of herself, which, I mean, like, fair enough. If she's re-recording all of her old albums, of course she's going to be doing an impression of herself, basically, which is like literally Lana 2.0. Like,
yeah. The thing is, she is so obsessed with critical acclaim and being considered cool. And it's like, Taylor, girl, it is never gonna happen. Like, I also used to want people to think I was cool. And then I realized I'm not cool. I'm never going to be mysterious. Like, people like me for other reasons. People like Taylor for other reasons, you know, like she's so obsessed with this. And I think that's what got her into this situation with this album, because Folklore and Evermore were her two most critically acclaimed albums by a long shot. You know, up until the pandemic, she was queen of bangers. Mm-hmm. And that's an amazing thing to be queen of. That's why you have a private jet, girl. Like, and then during the pandemic, she released these folksy albums and people were like, wow, this is so surprising. This is great. And those were critically acclaimed. And now she's quadrupling down on that and giving it to us supersized. And it's kind of like, okay, I do think she's doing this as an exorcism, because her tweet about it was like, I'm getting this off my chest. I'm wiping the slate clean kind of thing. And this era is over now. Like, now that this music is out, this chapter is over. Also, I think that was a little bit like, this isn't about Travis, so don't say it is. But I think the snake is eating its own tail a little bit.
Yeah.
Just in pursuit of critical acclaim. And Lana is what Taylor kind of wants to be, even though Lana was pilloried in the beginning of her career, but she is critically acclaimed now and she's cool now. And Taylor, I think, yeah, that's why where this is all going. And I just want someone around her to be like, and I think they will. And I think dating an NFL player who like fingers her while they're playing Grand Theft Auto is a perfect place for bangers to come out of.
Goals.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, I don't need that visual.
I know. I'm sorry. Sorry for saying that.
It's part of the album. That's she gave it to us. We didn't invent that. We never thought that. That is like what, there's a whole song about it.
I know,
it. Like,
but yeah, finger, I'm a mother. I shouldn't be saying this shit.
Lol.
Oh, yeah, that's rough.
So two things. I feel like this number one is to Maddie Healy, for Maddie Healy. She wanted to do something that was like, this is probably a response to something that he said to her, like, you would never like just do like art for art's sake, or like you like wouldn't like, you're a poet, but you always do these pop bangers. Like, I feel like this was the most like revenge coded. Yeah, it is unhinged in the way of like, this is a pissed album with something to prove. And I think all of it is just like, look what I can do. I can do it. I can do it like you said I couldn't, better than you. I'm going to make fun of you. And like, you're never going to escape me. And I've so been, the cancer in me sees the cancer in her, where it's like you want to like try to escape our Fortnite. Try to escape our Fortnite, bro. Like, you can't escape our Fortnite, bro. Like, this is our Fortnite forever, bro. Live in the Fortnite with me for many, many Fortnites, bro. Like, I feel like that's part of it. I think the other reason that she released this now when she did is because she is still on the Eras Tour. I think obviously the Travis records are going to give us some bar mitzvah music again, and thank God. But I feel like this is an album that isn't for touring. And it's like, she's already touring with Eras. She's going to tour with the Travis tracks forevermore. I feel like this is meant to be something that actually just kind of like lives in its own, in the same way that perhaps the Maddie Healy relationship does in her mind.
Do you know what this album is for? This is for, holy shit, I've been on tour for 2 years. I'm tired. I want an excuse for a piano break. That's what this album is. So that she can come out on stage and do her in a piano, so that she doesn't have to keep clomping around in those leotards because she's tired.
She does the piano breaks.
Now she can have even more.
Oh, so additional piano break on top of the, let's see, one, two, 3 p.m.
Yeah, man.
Right?
What else is she going to do? Is she going to break dance to this album? She's going to work it in somehow.
I would like to see a vigilante shit rendition of Down Bad.
That's fun.
Yes. Yes. With the chairs.
I think it's less about piano breaks, more about like maybe like what you're saying, like mash up, like breaking up the Eras Tour, or even just adding dimension mm-hmm. to it, because it's basically like if the Eras Tour is showing all of the eras of opening chapters of like her longing, this is one where even per her pen, she's like closing it. So maybe by the end of this Eras Tour, she actually will have the feeling of like, okay, that's also already been toured and done. And I don't think this deserves like its own tour. Yeah. I don't think it will get its own tour, but I think it's a way to like enrich the Eras Tour. But what I want to say real quick is per Keely's point, I was thinking the Jack Antonoff thing too, that like it's such a great reminder of just like, yeah, when you get too comfortable in the same anything, it just like leads to stagnation. Like to me, the antithesis of this album, which I thought was maybe my favorite album of the year so far, we should have done a whole episode on it, but alas, I've just been listening to it nonstop. And Ariana Grande's album earlier this year was actually also a breakup album. It was 30 minutes long. Every single song is a banger. But I think part of why it was so successful, to me at least, is because it was a brand new collaboration with greatest of all time producer Max Martin. I think the like Ariana coming to the table with like new, more vulnerable, her version of poetry lyrics to share with a producer who she's never worked with before, ended up with like every Ariana song, as sad and personal as they might be, they all have hooks. They are all hits. That is a great short album. When it was over, I re-listened immediately because I was like, wait, they're all like you with Beyonce. I'm like, they're all in my head. Like, I think these are amazing. And like, it gets better and better as I listen. Whereas this, if you like, yeah, in order to keep re-listening to it, it's almost like a project. It's like even like listening to it to talk about it today, like felt like it was the first time for this podcast I felt like I had like homework. I was like, okay, yeah. gotta get back to the books, like gotta get back to my Taylor studies, like so we can talk about it. And it's just like the material is far too dense. It's just like a textbook.
Yeah, my favorite review was on Stereo Gum actually, and they said, you know, the music was being swallowed by the lore. It was like just so much world building and so much, you know, here's what this guy did and here's what that guy did. And it just, yeah, it was too much. It was a lot of backstory. Having said that, I do enjoy trying to figure out which guy everything's about. And I really like the song, The Tortured Poets yes. Department, and it comes across so differently. The title of the song comes across so differently than the title of the album, because the marketing for the album and the artwork with it and everything has seemed very earnest. Like, I am a tortured poet and this is my department. Whereas the song feels like she's making fun of him. She's saying, oh, what are you in the tortured poets department? Which I can get down with.
100%.
You know?
Yeah. Well, that's kind of what I think, though. That's why I think the whole album is basically not meant to be like almost a Taylor Swift album. I think it's like an amalgamation of her career to this point, but also these guys. I mean, it even ended with a John Mayer track. Like, this was a whole like, okay, I could see it being like, I have met my husband, so like I'm gonna just get everything out that I could possibly have to free write about these dudes out. And I do think that while she was writing this, I guess like the shocking thing to everybody is that like it's not about Joe Alwyn at all. Like, this is a Matty Healy album, and I think in that way she is making fun of him. And I think the whole album is her almost like, I could just, she didn't put it in the album unless I missed the line somewhere, but like almost like a dare where he's like, you would never just like put out like a meandering hookless poetry album like I would or whatever. And she's like, watch me. Like, I think the whole thing was like a, you can't shake me kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. I think like if we put their relationship in context, right, I do think it's very interesting to like think back to literally a decade ago, right? Like, they were both seen wearing each other's like t-shirts, like Matty Healy wearing the 1989 t-shirt at a 1975 tour stop in Milwaukee. She was seen wearing a 1975 shirt leaving a recording studio in LA. Also, same month in 2014. A month later, they're 1975 has a show at Terminal 5 in New York City, and Taylor Swift notoriously is in the balcony with Karlie Kloss. And yes, this literally, and like all, like talk about the constellation of like things that spurned off from this moment. Maddie allegedly dedicates Falling For You, which from their debut record, their debut like self-titled album, was one of my favorite songs. It is incredible. It's like literally like about falling in love with somebody, but essentially dedicates it to Taylor, who's up on the balcony allegedly macking on Karlie Kloss, right? But think about that in context. There's been 10 years of buildup to this moment, and what Taylor is basically saying, like fresh out the slammer, like comparing herself to being leaving the hospital, like in the alchemy, and like in a prison, right? And now that she's out, she's able to like spend this fortnight with Maddie Healy, and it seems to be like this really faded thing that she's had so many questions about. She's idealized it, you know, in The Smallest Man Who Ever Lived, she's like, you didn't live up. So like it shows me that like she's been thinking about this, pondering upon it, had this 6-year relationship with Joe Alwyn. The second she gets out of it, out the slammer, girl, out the slammer.
Who let her call it that?
The slamming slammer. Like, at least he was hot.
Yeah. And then she literally says, you know, because it wasn't sexy, was it, once it wasn't forbidden. So the fact that, like, they were actually able to act on it, you know, gave all of these answers to this, like cloud of what ifs she seems to have blown out in her head. So I think that that's like really kind of essential context, is like there was like 10 years of, you know, tension or whatever. I don't even know if we could call it tension, but like, you know, like another big theme of this album is like longing, pining. Like that's what all tortured poets do. They all long wistfully, like, you know. So I think that she hit the nail on the head as far as like, you know, building this arc. But yeah, as far as like, you know, executing it with 31 freaking tracks, I don't know, it feels like a deluge.
I could see her arguing that like that's the point. Like I could see her making an artistic case for like that's how this type of thing feels. Like, I mean, I do, one of the things I did enjoy about it, and put a pin for the Patreon, could not possibly say it publicly, but that I did relate to, was that sometimes like it isn't those like long-term relationships that leave you knocked off your feet in pain. It is the like the disappointments of like the long crush gone wrong, or like the thing that never quite came to be, or that like the buildup and then like the expectation wasn't met. Like it is those like 2 weeks something somethings after that long relationship that you write that you've been using to escape for so long. Then you realize like, oh my God, like this is what it was. And the deep disappointment of that, I find in my own life, has been, I would say, far greater. Cause like once you, at the end of a 6-year relationship, it's like, all right, we've done everything we can, like party's over, everyone out of the pool, you know? Whereas like the thing that, yeah, that longing is, you know, poetry, and that is where great music can come from. But then when you actually, I really relate to that, like when you actually come into contact, or even come into close contact, or, you know, start to actually flirt with the idea of making that fantasy real, that is truly maybe some of the deepest disappointment I've felt ever. So I appreciated that aspect of it, which I felt very human listening, where I thought, okay, Taylor, like this is annoying, but like, boy, do I understand that annoying relationship where you're like, no, I should have just kept it a fantasy.
Yeah.
Fuck.
You know what it's like when you go through a long-term relationship and then you have a rebound, and then the rebound ends. It's like you were standing on the hose that whole time, and all the emotions, the heartbreak was building and building and building, because you weren't feeling it. And then once the rebound ends, you take your foot off the hose and it's like Looney Tunes squirting everywhere. That's, yeah, I guess what this album is. It's just the water was building up. Do you know what I mean? It is funny to me how boring every Joe Alwyn song is and always has been. I mean, it works.
Yeah.
Why are there balloons on Keely's screen?
I don't know. Did you guys just see that? That happened to me one time in a work meeting. And let me tell you what, I screamed like a little girl. I don't know why that happens to me.
Wow. Congratulations.
Zoom gods must love me.
That's so random.
So we've been long time Joe Alwyn haters on this pod, even though we are not Swifties. Yeah. We have always said she deserved better than Joe Alwyn. Always. Because She confirmed what we said about it, that he was keeping her in a cage. She was sitting at home at the house by the heath while he was out doing press or whatever, because he didn't want her to eclipse him. And I hated that for her. It was so annoying. So I don't know. It kind of annoys me that, not annoys me because I'm annoyed at Taylor, but just because I'm annoyed at men. Like, I hate that Matty Healy is getting what he wanted, which is to be a muse for the biggest album that everyone's going to be talking about all year besides Cowboy Carter. It's probably in a tie with Cowboy Carter. But, like, you know Matty Healy's loving every moment of that. And you know Joe Alwyn is loving that he was barely in it. I just wish she could have flip-flopped them just to annoy them.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know, though. It's like, I feel like she kind of paints this picture of, like, you know, I was, you know, as much of a willing participant in this as, you know, Joe was with this demise. Like, on Guilty as Sin, she's like talking about, you know, basically emotional cheating.
I think,
you know
what I mean? I think she kind of cheats on like everyone.
So she like alludes to this like bubble of issues that's ongoing, this undercurrent. And then like, when I think about that in the context of like, You're Losing Me, right? That song that like literally broke TikTok because Taylor was like, oh my God, it's happening. And everybody was like, oh my God, it's happening. Cause Swifties just do that. And I think like, you know, she was very much so honest about there being like, you know, she's trying, he's trying, it's not working. But like, yeah, I don't know. I feel very indifferent about Joe Alwyn. I don't know why. Like, he's a blonde man.
Does too.
Like, what am I going to feel about him? No, nothing. Like, I don't know.
He's a blonde man who brings like nearly nothing to the table. Like, that's I think that when they first started dating, she was like, okay, perfect. Like, I have a bad reputation and like, I just need someone that's like super vanilla to be pretty with. And just, I think she was like attracted to, at the beginning, I think she was attracted to the fact that he actually wasn't going to bring like a lot of drama and spotlight into her life. Cause I think she was feeling like very vulnerable in that moment. And then I think it just, especially post COVID, like I think then it just like went too far where she was like, damn, this is hella boring. Like, oh no. Like, what did I do? Also, who did I buy? Like, who did I rent all these apartments with or whatever? Buy rent. Like, who am I living with in all these homes?
Yeah. Like, also going back to reputation just for a second. He was a nobody. Like, I think she had a lot of gall to just be like, you and I would have a big reputation, like if we got together and everybody would be talking about it. Like,
I think
who
that had to have been about someone else.
But I think it was.
I think this album gives us a little bit more context to a lot of her previous albums. Like, I think that was about Matty Healy. Mm. I think that was her. I think she was been flirting with him for years across every platform. And actually, they should have stayed muses. Now they are muses. But now it's like, and now the muse is done. And it's like, okay.
We need to talk about But Daddy, I Love Him. Her diss track against her own fans. Something really that I've noticed in the last 3 days about myself is if I didn't look at Twitter and TikTok, I would probably like Taylor Swift a little bit more than I do. And I don't dislike her, but I realize that I dislike a lot of her fans. A lot of her fans are very annoying and ill-informed. And like, they're crazy shit. Like this woman who was on the BBC saying she speaks to a group that's not spoken for. Huh? She speaks for me. I'm a like middle-class white woman. I'm spoken for, girl. Like everyone's speaking for me. I have Stanley Cups. I have, you know, so much is going for me. So many people are trying to get my money. So many people are going for my interests. Like we are spoken for. And then this girl has.
Who's speaking for bad dancers, Ma?
She is speaking for bad dancers. Maybe that's what this woman meant. Also, the woman was like, she speaks for young people. And she was like damn near 40. And I'm like, none of us are young in this conversation anymore. Like, she has young.
Including Taylor.
Yeah, like, she has some like really young fans. But this is not she's not a teeny bopper anymore, you know? But this other tweet that's been going around that, to her credit, this girl still has not deleted, even though everyone's been dunking on her for days. People hate Taylor Swift's music because it challenges and forces them to slow down, digest, and engage deeper with what they're audibly consuming. Instant gratification is ruining our ability to fully appreciate music. So this is her, her name's Jasmine, and her Twitter handle is Good Girl Fee.
Okay,
Jasmine, since when? Thursday? Right. I mean, this is me. Me. Let me do a whole stanza.
That's what everyone's like. Remember, hey kids, spelling is fun. Like, Taylor has Taylor has asked nothing of her listeners until, yes, very recently.
No, brain cells not required.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Enjoy this music. This is on every Quick Check playlist from the beginning of time. This is made for the masses until maybe now. This is
I will say, like, Taylor feeds that like illusion, though, right, of there being like some massive like thread or whatever, like through the like Easter egg things and like you know, doing the like puzzles, the decoding, and like all of the stuff that like feeds like the myth, the mythology around Taylor Swift more so than it does like anything that we know about her person. And, right? Like, and the code, these things are all built.
Yeah. And the code is like, I capitalized Kim. It's like,
okay, whoa. No, hold on. Put a pin in that.
Oh, yeah. Put a pin in that.
I know. Definitely putting,
I'm actually not ready to go there yet. I actually want to talk about that in
detail.
Definitely
detail.
Putting a pin in that. But I'm saying, like, with this tweet that's like, she asks us to engage more deeply. It's like,
well, right.
Don't hurt yourself. You know, it's like, we don't have to engage that deeply.
I think the thing, per what Keely is saying, though, like, one of the things that I find simply miraculous about astrology, surrender, and yes, the Space Trash podcast is that, I guess what I wonder is how much of the like Easter egg, like building is actually just reflected back to her, and now she's capitalizing on it. I mean, honestly, if you listen back to, like, sometimes I listen back, this is like my own shit, and like, I love me, thank you Taylor, but sometimes I listen back to Space Trash episodes. Like, we did an episode a couple days ago, it wasn't like one of the greatest of all time, but it's like, actually, like, it, like, we start off by telling like a two Sarah story, then we tell a two Katie story. I said they're all Catherines. Then we did a story about Catherine, then we did a story about and like there was like this through line of like, we did double names, the whole thing. It was just like you'd have to really be a fan to know what I mean. And I certainly am. I edit the podcast. But but sometimes even at the end of every episode, Molly and I will say like, perfect Herald, like, holy shit, perfect Herald. Like, just by listening. And
we do a Herald every time.
Yeah. Just by listening and responding and by allowing like the improvisational elements to just sort of click into place and just recognizing them. Like, one might argue that it's like, whoa, like, there was this, like, a perfect through line, or like, I don't know, like, there's a part of me that's like, okay, like, either way, the 13th is Taylor's birthday. Like, I actually read something that was saying that, like, once the fans realized that every fifth track was a sad track, Taylor specifically picked this track for the fifth track. But I actually think what I'm reading was correct, I think that, or the impression that I got, I wish I knew where I read it, but it was like, basically now she's doing that because the fans notice it. But I don't know how much of it was like from the beginning, like mastermind on purpose. And it's just like, she's just living the patterns right of her life. And she's so famous and so beloved that everyone's noticing all of the little patterns and going, whoa, it's all a perfect Herald.
In the 60s, when they started a conspiracy theory that Paul McCartney was dead, the Beatles started playing into it. Like, they had him be the only barefoot one on the Abbey Road cover. And like, because it's fun and funny and stupid, and it builds intrigue. So yeah,
it's almost like polling. It's like when you find out what the people want you to say, like, you say it, and then it builds your business. It's like, crap.
Right. The thing with Daddy I Love Him is, what I learned this weekend is that I actually dislike her vocal fans more than I dislike her. And I also realized she dislikes them as well. So there's that song. And then there's the fact that this album is 31 tracks long, and you can't, what is the deal with the vinyl, Keely? It's like $53 to buy one vinyl, and each one only has, I think, the original release plus one bonus track. So if you did want to have everything on vinyl from this release, you'd have to spend hundreds of dollars. And I mean, and she's not the only star who's guilty of like fleecing her fans. You know, I thought about buying a Cowboy Carter sweatshirt, and the freaking things are $150. No. So it's just, this is so shameless. These people are loaded.
Yeah. I mean, I can't even like knock the people who like buy all the, you know, limited edition vinyl. Cause like Lana just released a limited edition Coachella festival edition of Did You Know That There's a Tunnel Under Ocean Boulevard? And you better believe I bought it because it matches my dining room. Mm-hmm. It's the perfect display piece. So I like
that. It's like, you didn't have to buy three copies of it to have the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. True.
Fair. Keely, I'm not knocking the people who buy it. We are all thoughtless consumers. Like we
love capitalism. I'm sure.
Yeah. I'm knocking Taylor for fleecing her fans like this. It's not nice. You already are a billionaire. What do you need to do this for?
To be fair, like she is beyond like, I think when people like want to break it down to her being like a person, right? I don't think that people stop to also consider that like she's like like one woman industry. Like she has an entire team around her that rely on her, that she's got not just a team, but like literally like, you know, I'm sure thousands of employees that fall directly underneath of her.
I mean, tons of mansions that I'm sure keep upkeeping that people live in. Like, yeah, she has staffs on staffs on staffs.
Oh, boo-hoo.
She's a corporation. So I don't think that, like, when specifically, like, people want to critique her, like, her air travel time, her flying 30 minutes or whatever. I mean, like, the environmentalist in me obviously has a different critique, but I'm talking about the, like, critiques of her personhood, of being like, well, how could you do this to your fans? And, like, it's like she is literally part of the machine. Like she's not she's beyond that. And I think a part of this record is her literally being like very forthright with that and being like, no, like I'm beyond that. Like people want to run their like in Daddy, I Love Him, being like, what was it about the Olivia Rodrigo suing thing? What was the line in it where she's talking about where people say that I'm gonna sue if you step on my lawn or something like that?
Oh, I didn't even notice that line.
Yeah, so she is like very cognizant of like what people are saying about her.
Are you? She's so far up her own ass with that.
But I think that like most of like the critique like fail like critiques about this fail to negotiate that she is like beyond single personhood, person status. Anything that we say like that is not, you know, cushioned with that, I think is it doesn't have any tie to like actual reality for the most part.
Right.
Like she's not the one being like, I'm doing seven different vinyl variations and you're going to all buy them and blah, blah, blah. It's her team.
Right.
It's a Universal Music Group that is making a ton of money off of her. It's the vinyl pressing factories that are literally seeing the biggest resurgence of vinyl interest in the last like 30 years.
But you know that she is in her Menchie's all day, every day. And she's seeing people be like, I spent $500 on this. Like, she's so out of touch. She's got a rich dad. Like, come on, let me have this. That's what bothers me about her, is just like, I don't know if I could be that rich and that successful and still be so aloof about the problems that everyday people face, because I want to believe I would be different. That's really what it comes down to. That's why it triggers me. And who knows if I would be different? I'm never going to be in that position. But like, I am trying to convince myself that I would be. So that's why I complain about
it. And that's part of what she was contending with during the Miss Americana documentary that was released several years ago. And she is, you know, having this like conversation with her team, with her publicist, with her dad, about coming out against Donald Trump leading up to the election. And, you know, they're literally all going back and forth. And she's like, but I'll be in the wrong if I say something. And her team's like, well, if you say something, like, you're going to be forever associated with this. And like, you're not going to be able to rebound image wise. Like, so like,
and then she decided never to say anything ever again.
Right. But that's what I'm saying, though. So like, it could very well be that she's like, you know what, guys, this kind of sucks for my like younger fans, like behind closed doors, right? In the boardroom meetings that I'm sure she's having, where she presents this like massive body of work that she's dumping on us, essentially. And the, you know, men in their suits are like, absolutely not. Like, you're going to have as many vinyl variants as you can. And if you don't, well, guess what?
Then she,
like, we're going to do it anyways.
She has enough money that she can control it. Like, she is the one at the end of the day who can say, okay, then I'm not releasing an album with you. Like, come on. Her dad's in finance. Yeah. Like, it all, the buck stops.
I think now her dad's in Taylor. I don't think anybody in her family does anything but works for Taylor.
She is finance. Yeah, no. She is financing.
She is finance. Yes.
Like, I don't know.
Yeah, she's the capital.
She's the capital. Capital. Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you think about that track where she hates on all her fans?
I just want to say, you shocked me with that. You're talking about Daddy, I Love Him.
Yes.
I read think piece after thought piece about how, like, it's about Maddie Healy, and then at the end it's about Travis. Like, she switches. And then I read one that was like, the first verse is about Joe, the second verse is about Maddie, the third verse is about Trav. And now you're trying to tell me that the whole thing is about us?
It's about Keely, really.
Say more. What is your source? What is your source?
My brain.
Okay, say more.
Literary interp.
This is the blog post waiting to happen, Ma. We're going to put it on the map.
No, like, everyone is saying this, aren't they, Keely? Like, because it's like, how dare you tell me that I can't do whatever? You guys are all named Hannah, and that's why you suck. Like, I don't remember the words.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I think this is probably one of my favorite songs on the album. And literally, I don't know why. I don't know why.
Well, I do, because it's country. It's the most countryfied of the whole thing. Even though it's got, like, yeah, it's got a lot of synth, but it's still like, the country is coming through. And that's what I liked that about this song. I was like, she's being really ironic, because everyone's always, all her diehard conservative fans are begging for her to come back to country. And she's like, oh, you want to hear some country? I'm going to sing about how annoying you guys are. Like, Sarah, this line, I just learned these people only raise you to cage you, clutching their pearls.
I thought that was Joe. I thought that was the Jovers.
Singing what a mess. They try and save you because they hate you. Too high a horse for a simple, like, she's saying they're all on their high horse. I liked I'm Having His Baby. No, I'm not. Keely didn't like it.
I thought it was so ridiculous, because here's how I heard it. Like, I'm having his baby. Dot, dot, dot. No, I'm not. Like, like, and that felt so silly to me. I was like, okay. Also, taking it back to the Joe Alwyn stuff. That was one of the biggest rumors, was like, that's where she is. That's why there's been no public signing. It wasn't that Joe was keeping her in a cage in a mental asylum. It was that she allegedly secretly was having his baby. And during the pandemic, that's why there was no public sightings of them. So that was a big part of the like rumor. So I think that is definitely a nod to that. Now, fast forward to the Midnight's release, when she was doing those like single track reveals, and she was posting the Instagram reels to Facebook with like the phone. She'd pick up the phone and go, it'd ring, and she'd go, track 8 is, you know, when before she released that, there was one clip where she had basically said about Lavender Haze that this is about all those weird rumors that everybody keeps, you know, propelling about me. Most people, and I want to say most people, most Swifties that buy into the entire, like, she's, you know, heterosexual, whatever, because there's this whole, you know, air of her sexuality.
I love the Gaylor stuff. I love
Gaylor stuff. I am such a Gaylor.
I love it.
We have a Gaylor episode from in the annals of this podcast. If you go way, way back, the first ever episode of Diva Behavior was a Gaylor deep dive with Harry Hill,
fun.
Melissa, and Jen.
Diva Behavior. That. Yeah, I am a Gaylor truther. I'll say, though, this record has like kind of made me question some things.
It's a very straight album.
It's so straight.
Devastatingly straight. It's so straight that it made me want to be more gay. I was like, I hate us. I fucking hate us. Take me to Lady Town.
My wife, literally, we were talking about Daddy, I Love Him while we were working out earlier. And she was like, I just realized something about the song. It really is the straight girl anthem. And I was like, what makes you say that? And she was like, every straight girl ever feels that way about every man ever. But Daddy, I Love Him, you know, but anyway.
Well, and also like the pregnancy fake outs is such a like straight girl thing. Like, I feel like there's not that many lesbian relationships that are like, and by the way, surprise, it was an accident. It's like, it's probably not an accident. Like,
right.
That's, I feel like the accidental pregnancy lean is very straight.
That's but, our ace in the hole. That's all we got. That's
our
all we
dick
got.
In the hole. It's our dick in the hole.
Oh, yeah, really. No. No, but going back to that statement where she was like, there are all these weird rumors swirling. The hetero Swifties were like, she's talking about you Gaylers, you weirdos speculating on her sexuality, like, and you guys need to stop and blah, 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 blah. She has not discredited that once. Tree Payne, her publicist, a notorious like Wonder Woman of publicity.
That's her only client. She's like,
yeah,
like, I mean, that's all she needs. But like, what an incredible job! Like, wow, yeah,
right? Like, wow. Really cool. Pain. Yeah, actually, bro. No, I don't. No,
I kind of think I would. That's a creative job. Oh, that was the article I was reading. Real quick, the article I was reading was actually saying that part of Tree Payne's work was actually being such a keen observer to the Swift like catalog and behavior that she actually was part of discovering the. Like the accidental Easter eggs in the first place. Yeah. And then it was her. That's what I was reading. It was about Tree Payne. It was about her. Like, she was the one that actually was like, oh, we can use all of this like pattern to actually pretend like it was on purpose and just like now like spin it into like a thing. And Taylor was like, my God. Anyway.
Okay. No. Yes. I totally agree with that. But with the Daddy, I Love Him stuff about, you know, her, you know, pointing to the exact rumors and being like, you guys all see me as this like lovesick, you know, can't help myself, like heroine type figure. You guys all think that the only reason I'm interested in this is because I want to have somebody's baby. No, I'm not. And you should see your faces is, I think, one of the more genius lines on the album.
Because so I was right.
The rest of it is very much like, I don't know, daft. Like, it's not, like, it's very empty. Like, there are so many songs of hers that are so slicing lyrically. This album, to me, like, Molly, you said it, she threw the book at the wall and just waited to see what stuck. Like, Dustin Florida, please, come on.
I can't believe we didn't talk about that
yet. Also on my, we're going to. We have time. That was also on my list of things I'm furious about. The fact that I'm in Florida, Keely. And the fact that I didn't get, there are so many Florida references in this album. The fact that I didn't get a Florida banger to even use in a story is infuriating to me.
You mean an Instagram story?
Yeah. I would have posted if my life depended on it.
Yeah.
I mean, I did really like the rhyming of Gueston and Destin. That's the best thing I can say about that track. But this motif of moving to Florida, she's done some Republican ass shit. This tops all of it. This is Taylor Swift.
Especially Destin.
And also, Taylor, you lived in Europe for the past 6 years. Go to fucking Greece. Go to Spain. Destin?
Santorini.
Yes, I need to learn why she's doing this, because I'm sure there's a good reason, and then it's going to click for me and I'm going to be like, okay, that's cool.
But the lore behind the reason why she picked Florida
that is why.
Is because allegedly she and Joe Alwyn finally broke it off while she was in Florida for the Eras tour. So while she was performing in Tampa was when they allegedly broke the thread.
That doesn't make it right.
Yeah, I mean,
it doesn't make it right, but enough. it does make the Destin over the Gold Coast of Florida make more sense to me, because Destin is the closest city to Tampa that is aspirational on any level.
I still have a question though about Daddy, I Love Him. I guess the reason why I'm so obsessed with this song is because one of the things that has historically bothered me about Taylor is just how focus grouped and market approved she is. So to see her saying F you to her fans is very fun for me. But I just don't know where the fans go from here? Like, and I also, is she an edgelord? Like, I need to understand, like, she's sticking up for Maddie Healy's right to go on Dirtbag Podcast, which is fine because I would go on Dirtbag Podcast if they invited me.
That's part of what my pin is in. My pin's in it. My pin's in it.
Right. So, okay, Sarah, what's your pin in?
Okay. Well, first of all, my pin's in the podcast, but we're coming back to that. What I want to say to Keely, and actually what you just said, Molly, is you're bringing my thought together so beautifully. We're braiding here on the Taylor Swift takedown pod.
It's not a takedown. I think we're being so fair. And
no, but I think we're being very fair and balanced.
I want to say that to quote Fox News and the way Florida actually like shakes out, my impression of the Daddy I Love Him was Sarah, I hate them, which is now coming together to me. So I thought it was actually, I liked the take that it was a three stanza approach to each boyfriend. I am very sort of dick centric. And after this album, I might not be, but like, I felt that having each one be about each boy, that was like the joy of my, like the only thing about this album that I truly, like when I was listening to a song and I was like, this isn't about any boy, skip, like Mac or Molly or Susie or Sam, skip, Robin, skip. If this is not like a boy coded track, I don't want to hear it. Okay. But that being said, if it was a girl coded track, I would be as interested. I would love a Carly track. I would love some Gaylor affirmations in here. So it's not about boy or girl, really. It's about love or lack of love. But yeah. I similarly, Keely, I did not stay awake for the album to be released. But when I woke up, my whole Discover page was a deluge of all of the clips of the girls at the watch parties. Listening to the line, I'm pregnant, just kidding, no, I'm not. And they're all like, the reaction videos to the Daddy I Love Him chorus were so triggering for me. I was like, you losers. I just felt like, what the fuck, you guys? They're all like singing, like, they're like, but Daddy, I love him, blah, blah, and I'm having his baby. They're all like, and then they're like, just kidding. And they're like,
well, have you noticed
over in their chairs? It's like,
discourse since she's like started like dating Travis Kelce is literally just been like, oh my god, their baby, he's so cute, and it's like,
right,
you guys are disgusting.
No, that's me.
But see,
that's my discourse.
Well, for the record, though, like that's like in your, I would say, your wheelhouse at the moment. Like, that's like so fair. I mean,
that's
not coming up babies for you.
That's my oeuvre.
Your ovaries. Yeah.
I just really like them together. I'm sorry. I just do. I think they're going to sing Democracy. You can hear our episode about it from 3 months ago.
Yeah.
After hearing both of your takes about the song, my impression of those videos has done a complete 180. So I thank you for that, because now I'm like, oh, I love those videos, because actually you're saying, where do the fans go from there? It's like, they maybe see themselves. Like, if anything, where they go from there is she actually does have them wrapped around her finger. And actually, like, they might not even know that they're being joked about in that moment in that way. And maybe they never will, but either way, I actually now really appreciate that line and that song way differently than I did before, because thinking that it was about a guy, a part of me was a little bit like, I don't know, my first impression of it now I feel was so wrong, so I don't even know if it's worth saying, but my first impression of it was just like, I almost felt it was like lazy, like a JK, like, I just felt like, oh, it rhymes-ish, you know, like, I was like, oh, JK, like, you know, and you're like, psych, I thought she was doing like a psych to us, and I was like, why, like, what's the freaking point? And then I was like, oh, and it's about the guys, and it's like everyone's different reaction, like, I'm having Joe's baby, you wish, I'm having Maddie's baby, everyone's upset, I'm having Travis's baby, and everyone's like, yeah. So that's, and that made sense to me, but even still, I was like, why do a prank? And now I'm like, oh, the prank's on you,
she's edgelord,
midnight watchers, edgelord. But I don't, but that's where I think Maddie Healy, I think this was a hugely permission given album for her, and that perhaps the relationship wasn't meant to work. I think clearly it wasn't, but that relationship with a certain edgelord. And I would say this, like, I actually don't think Maddie Healy is much of an edgelord at all. I think he just crunk.
I was going to say this when we were talking about Lana and like the comparisons between Taylor and Lana. This is the first person that has a drug problem that Taylor has dated.
Yeah.
Lana's got experience out the wazoo with this. And I think that's probably some of where those like she calls Maddie at one point. I can't remember what song it is, but Pretty Baby.
Yeah.
Like that is so Lana coded. Come on.
Yeah.
Come on. And all of this, going through hell just for 1 hour of sunshine. Like, literally, Lana has a song called Thunder on Blue Bannisters that literally is like, I know what you're like when the party ends. And, like, it's the parallels there are insane to me. So I think, like, another part of it, too, is, like, she's dating somebody that has, like, for the first time. She's dating somebody that has this like existential like type error to them. Cause most, and I don't know where Maddie Healy is at in his recovery, if he's in recovery, whatever.
According
I do know
to his Aunt Deborah, he's in a new relationship and very happy.
Yeah. As far as, you know, his usage goes, I don't know where he stands there, but like, I don't want to make any assumptions, as far as that goes, but I also don't think that is like something that goes away, you know, like we're talking about like the concept of like a tortured poet. Like most tortured poets have a drug dependency. Like if we want to talk about like the Beat generation of tortured poets, the ones that started it all, like on, you know, St. Mark's, and like you got the Jack Kerouacs and the Allen Ginsbergs and those like class of, you know, just honest.
I mean, even the people that she references, I mean, who did she compare him to?
Dylan Thomas
died at 39 of a heroin overdose, right?
Right. And then Patti Smith, who was kind of in that same like beatnik crowd, in the 60s. So I think that this is probably the first time she's ever dealt with that. Like, think about the visuals from the 1989 era. Like, she's like in like topiary surrounded mansions, and like she said something about I can't remember what song it is now because there's so many songs, it's so hard to keep the references straight with this record songs. But she says I was an Aston Martin that you drove straight into the ditch and then walked away and hid. And it's like, okay, so you knew that you were dating in a different pool,
right.
So like, again, like I think some of these references, going back to like the Taylor and Lana thing, like I think some of it may just come with the territory, right? Mm-hmm. Like think about like, you know, Blue Jeans, like, you know, I'd basically die for you. And Taylor's like, I love you. It's ruining my life.
Yep.
But I think there are definitely some parallels there when we talk about like the substance abuse portion of like what codes Maddie Healy's entire being.
100%. And I actually, you've actually reframed something else for me now too, which, right, I feel like in a way, one of the differences between this piece of work and her others is that this is the only one where she's even alluding to her own alcohol use. She's alluding to pills. It's like, this is the first album where she's even kind of admitting that she's not just here for like corporate consumption ultimately. And like, I think if anything, I mean, whether it's like Lana coded or not, it's almost like addiction for the story. It's like, oh, I didn't this is my druggy era, you know? And it's almost like for the bit, like she did it for the bit, you know? I will say this though, I maybe have never seen something sexier. And this is like so, like such, again, Capricorn issue. Keely and I are Capricorn moons, Molly's Capricorn suns. This is a real Cap. Tell me if you stand me on this. When they were having their brief fortnight, and they had.
We can only refer to it as the fortnight.
When they were having their fortnight, did you think that like that was even like, because she was like, okay, like if they're not fans of mine already, like in the same way that she like half the Swifties have become football fans and vice versa. Like, do you think now she's like, and I'm getting the gamers? But
I think it's because she's been dating British guys for too long and they always say Fortnite. Do you know what a Fortnite is?
Yeah. It's like 14 days or something, right? Yeah. Every
14 nights.
It actually used to be on the Moonual bio, but I might change it back now. But at the time, everyone was like, why would you put this? Like the video games. I was like, the moon, like, virtual moon rituals every fortnight.
Because it's
like the new and full moon. Now I'm bringing it back. On the fortnight. I loved when they did that, those shows while they were having the fortnight.
and they both did the like they mouth like I love you to each other.
Oh, I love you.
That's all I want in the world. Some public recognition of you love me. I love you.
Yeah, no, I'm. Bar. I love public recognition. It's really gross when other people do it, though.
Understood.
I want to be publicly recognized? Yes. Watching other people, like, oh my
like,
god,
go fuck it's yourself.
Easy. I'm like, why, guys? Keep it inward.
I just, like, despite the whole tour, like bringing all of my childhood pop star Broadway dreams to a fore, it wasn't until there was like a mouthing "I love you" from across ponds that was like a romantic gesture with your longtime crush that I was like, okay, I'm jealous. I'm officially jealous. Not even that it's him, whatever. But I think that kind of thing is just like so. I just think that's so hot. That's so romantic to like. Something so public, but also like you'd have to like look for it. Like, I don't know. I mean, yeah. I said it at the beginning of the pod, I'll say it again. I think when he's not crunk, I imagine I think he'd probably great in bed.
Well, apparently he's a golden retriever who just wants his head pet. So,
he's a good boy. But that's
oh,
a good boy.
God. That just makes me want to die inward.
Oh my God, you guys. This album inspired me to write a poem about my daughter.
Aww.
Do you want to hear?
A torture.
Are you going to make me cry? Don't do that right now, Molly.
No, it's so stupid. My little baby girl, she's got some great abilities, rolling back and forth with grace, poise, and agility. So much that she's good at. So many ways she rocks. But one thing she cannot do is keep on her freaking socks. I put them on. She takes them off. I pull them up and she just scoffs. She can barely grab with opposable thumbs, but she gets each sock off, every last one.
I love the wordplay in rocks.
Beautiful, Molly. That was beautiful.
That was beautiful. That's a rock and roll baby poem if I've ever heard one.
I know. I might put it to a beat.
Yeah.
Some synths.
There's a song I wrote in the fifth grade that I still sing all the time in my head, and I wish it was gotten bigger, but I think about it all the time too, but
is
I could say the
fart and poop is
actually that I was an adult, and that was actually underappreciated as well. But you want to hear it? I can sing real. No,
yeah, do it real quick, and then we'll
go. Okay. Walking down the hall, I see you strolling by. Know that there's no chance for me, but boy, you are fine. Living in my fantasy world where all my dreams come true. You know what, boy, that all my dreams would have you if you just come over and talk to me. It would be just like my fantasy, cause just talking to you makes feel good. Just talking to you makes feel good. Just talking to you makes feel good. First, wondered if you notice me when I say hello. You stare at me, then look away, cause boy, you don't know. All these jumbled knots inside that say I love you so. Hoping, dreaming, wishing, thinking, whoa. If you just come over and talk, get more metal. If you just come over and talk to me. It would be just like my fantasy, cause just talking to you makes feel good. Just talking to you makes feel good. Just talking to you makes feel good. And then there's like, and then I guess it ends with us talking. He's like, hey girl. And it's like, sort of the end.
Wow.
Could've, would've, should've.
Okay.
Just talking to you makes feel good. I did a little bit faster than the original pace just to get the, you know, ball rolling on ending the episode. But yeah, that's also something I'm really happy to be finally seen and recognized for. So also, it's like you could tell I wrote it pre like makeout days because it was like talking. It was like, talk. You want to talk? Fuck. Shit. Who knew what was in store? Conversation was half as good as the sex. Is that who knew even at that time?
It's also really funny because you love talking.
I am who I am. That's one thing about me. I've evolved very little in my life, and that's something I'm not proud of as a life coach. But
oh my god, this is our contribution
Sailor.
To the discourse. So obviously, take literally everything we have to say about Taylor Swift's artistry with a grain of salt. Okay, let's switch over to the Patreon. We're gonna talk about the Kim feud. This freaking song. Thank you, yeah. Amy. Thank you, Amy. Because
thank
it says
you,
Kim
Amy.
In it, and she dragged Northwest into it.
Right.
Low blow. Right.
Not Northy.
I know. We're going to go through Keeley's chart a little bit and talk about her chart twins.
And you can hear my big secret that's, I'm sure, not going to surprise anybody.
I think I can predict what it is.
I'm sure you can, yeah.
Make sure you join the Patreon, patreon.com/spacetrashpodcast. We've got mouths to feed. Sarah's got food
poisoning. We got vinyls to buy. I have food poisoning.
Vinyls to buy, girl.
Yeah. I have vinyls to buy and food to vomit.
And follow Keely. Keely, what do you have anything that you want to promote to the people before we switch over to the paywall?
Just hit me up on Twitter. I honestly don't tweet much anymore. I've become a social media recluse. But, you know, send me your favorite tweets.
Well, also,
at Keely Quinlan.
At Keely Quinlan extra N, and if you follow her on Twitter, you'll be in good company because so does Lana Del Rey. So
when she had her Twitter, it's deleted now.
No.
But yeah, that was part of the question for the culture blowback, was she deleted her Twitter.
That was a big blowback.
Is it tacky to say that maybe you should make it like your personal merch though, to have like Lana Del Rey follows you, like that screenshot on a sweatshirt?
What about Lana Del Rey DMs my wife?
Oh yeah, that's actually
That's
what about that?
That's huge.
That's something. I'm always, you know how they say 6 degrees of separation? I feel like I'm five.
You're less than six. She follows you. That's, following is 1 degree. Yeah. So okay. Patreon.com/spacetrashpodcast.
Space trash.
Trash in space.
Space trash.
Lifestyles, the rich and Uranus.
Space trash.
Celebrities, they're trash, but the astrology can help us understand.
Transmission incoming.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.